to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show that features the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Greta Anderson, together with Kay Puttock. Hi, Kay.
Hi, Greta. And hello to you, the listeners.
We've had a beautiful week this last week of October, and now I'm afraid it's time to wish that warm weather farewell. It's going to be a cold beggar's eve tonight.
You're right, though. It's been lovely out, and it's been a wonderful fall for the trees.
I know. Last year was tough on trees, but this year, magnificent.
Well, we've had much more in the second half of the hour about trees, including the emerald ash borer infestation detected right here in Storey County. But at the moment, we have another timely topic on hand, and its representative right here in the studio.
Yes, we have Lucy Martin, Storey County Auditor, the leader of all the behind-the-scenes efforts to get Storey County voters the ballots and the voting opportunities they need to ensure a fair and accessible election process. Welcome, Lucy.
Thank you.
Well, voting is just in 4 days, on Tuesday, I guess five, if you count today. Do you and your staff feel prepared?
We've spent the last several days training our election officials, so we feel good about that. We hope that the election officials do as well. Today is the last day we can mail absentees to people who have requested them. And then tomorrow is our last day that we will have satellite voting. We have two locations in Ames tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And there's also voting in my office tomorrow from 9 to 5.
Okay, we'll get to that in a moment. Early voting, both vote by mail and satellite voting, has been a trend in the past couple of decades. Are you seeing a lot of that kind of participation this year?
Yes. With every election cycle, we see more interest in the absentee ballot. And we are about 14,300 as of 5 p.m. last night. I was rushing around a bit. I was out of the office most of the day. And I think it was 14,330 was the final count.
Wow.
We did about 10,000 in the last like election in 2010. So most of those are by mail. I believe we've done 1,200 by satellite and about 1,500 in person over our counter.
Uh-huh. And do you notice any trend in terms of the parties, or is that something you'll deal with later?
Storey County, in terms of parties, there's a few more Dems than ours, and the numbers for those parties reflect that. Actually, most people in Storey County, about 40%, are registered without a party. So the parties have more interest in absentee ballots than the no parties.
Right.
But overall, the people are more classified as unaffiliated.
And so you mentioned that there are a couple more opportunities for satellite voting in Ames and also in your office in Nevada. Can you elaborate?
My office is open tomorrow. That's statutorily from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. You would just come into our office on the second floor of the Storey County Administration Building in Nevada, and you would vote right over our counter. We have two locations tomorrow. We're using the newly reopened library from 10 to 4. I was a little dismayed to see they tore up the sidewalk right in front, right after they reopened it. So, and also at Ascension Lutheran Church up on Bloomington Road. Those are both polling places also on Tuesday. So we're checking out some of our we have Wi-Fi hotspots new this election. So we're checking out our equipment there at those locations too. They work. We've already tested that, but now we'll test it in a live situation.
Well, is your job made – it seems like it would be made especially hard in a county with such a large transient population as represented by ISU freshmen and transfers. Does your office do any outreach to get freshmen registered in Storey County, or do you leave that up to the party organizers?
The parties and student organizations do a good job of pushing voter registration. The League of Women Voters did an excellent job this year, not just in Storey County, but they worked with student populations in, I think, four other places in Iowa. I've worked hard with them to just have their people prepared to answer questions. I just have 10 people in my office. I can't go out and do a lot of day-to-day outreach, mm-hmm. one-on-one outreach. The candidates, I always work with them and the parties. We ask them to use our forms. We tell them about common mistakes. And if we see those come in over the counter, we talk to those people. I think we have a good collaborative effort here in Story County. ISU was really, really accommodating to me this year. We tried something instead of skipping around and having satellite sites all over campus. I asked them to give me some temporary permanent space where we could set up and stay overnight and not have to break down our computers and our all of our paperwork. And we did that in the Memorial Union. We did almost 700 voters there. We did a lot of new registrants there. I talked to a lot of 18 and 19-year-olds who'd never voted before, we did a lot of help to help them fill out their paperwork properly. And anything I can do to help in that area, I'd like to do. However, you know, there are 34,000 students, so it is a sort of a growing constant problem for us on how to reach out to them best.
There was an article in the Tribune recently stating the Senate candidate Joni Ernst had requested records from all 99 county auditors. What kind of records does she want, and how is that affecting you?
I guess I don't know why people are so interested in this. Campaigns and candidates always request information from us. It was not unusual. It was pretty widespread request. Mm-hmm. What was unusual is they asked for a five-day turnaround, which is hard for us to do at this point in time. They asked for the training materials that we provide to our election workers, for our absentee list, what kind of training materials are provided with a recount request, if we had received any correspondence from the Braley campaign. So it was nothing was out of sorts or nothing okay. that we hadn't seen before. We just usually see requests like this more in a presidential cycle than mm-hmm. But we haven't had an open Senate seat in Iowa for 30 years. So there's a lot of national interest in our race. I understand that. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so presumably there'll be somebody checking to make sure that the from their campaign checking to make sure that the absentee balloters don't come and vote again. They're very concerned with voter fraud, and it seems on that side.
Well, you know, our absentee process in Iowa is very good. We use a statewide database. I can tell statewide who has an outstanding absentee ballot. All of our absentee activity in Story County is then sent out to the polling place. That's updated as of 5 p.m. on Monday, which is the last time someone can cast an absentee ballot in my office. So we have very good information that we're working from. Absentee balloters aren't always happy when they go to the polls. Some people have lost their ballot and they go to the polling place and then they have to vote a provisional ballot. That's the only way to do that. So if you have an absentee ballot, please make sure that it's returned to my office. It needs to be postmarked no later than Monday, November 3rd. And it has to arrive before the canvass, which is Wednesday, November 12th. So, and those could also be hand-delivered to the office.
Okay. That was going to be one of my questions. So on November 4th, how many polling places will there be in Story County open to voters?
We have 43 polling places. You are required to go to your residential precinct. You can't just present yourself at any of the 43 precincts and cast a ballot. Your ballot is only available at your residential precinct. If you don't know what your precinct is, please call my office, 382-7210.
Okay.
Or check your voter card. It also lists it on there.
382-7210.
Yes.
Is there a website as well?
Yes, it's storycountyiowa.gov. And then if you do a slash and then auditor, go to the auditor and elections page. We have a general election page that has all specific information to this election. We also have quick links on the side that you can check.
Okay. And we'll have that link on our website, too, mm-hmm. when we post mm-hmm. the story, this event. So we've heard about measures being introduced across the nation requiring a form of ID to vote. What is required for a person to vote in Story County?
If you're registered in Story County, we've already verified you. You have provided us identification information, which we check against a variety of databases. And you've also provided us a physical address, and we check that by mailing you a card. And if it comes back, then you're listed as inactive, and then you do have to show ID at the polls. So if your registration is up to date, you only have to present yourself and verify your information. If there is any irregularity with your record, or if you're a new registrant, then you will have to provide identification. If you're brand new, you'll also have to provide proof of residency. So.
Okay, and so there is registration on Tuesday.
We do have Election Day registration in Iowa. We've had that since 2008. The burden of proof is on the voter. It's a high bar. Again, you have to have both proof of identity and valid proof of residency. There are lists of those two things. I'm not going to try to remember them exactly. It's all right in the Code of Iowa. It's all in the laptops that your precinct election officials are using. They are provided with all that information. If you have any, I would prefer if people contact our office and we can give them that list so they are prepared and go to the correct polling place to do that. Some people just show up and have to be walked through the process day of. I hope they go to the right place. Sometimes they have to be told to go to the right place first and then do the process. So it's a lot easier to register 10 days before the election than to go through that process. But that process exists if you haven't done that.
Any other pointers for voters that we haven't touched?
Polls are open from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Election Day. That's 14 hours. There are busier times of the day. So if you can go not right in the morning, not at lunchtime, not at dinner time, you'll probably encounter less of a line. But
lots of people like seeing their friends at
the polls. It's a very social thing. And actually, a lot of my election workers, they like to do it because that's how they see a lot of people. I mean, especially in our smaller towns, it's a real social event. And when I send workers out of precinct to go there, then it's sometimes startling for the voters to see somebody that they don't know working the polling place. And that happens in Ames, too. So.
And those workers are paid?
Yes, they're paid. I don't pay them very well. Most of them are paid minimum wage. If they're a chairperson, you get 50 cents more an hour. So $7.25 or $7.75 an hour. Their mileage is reimbursed and their cell phone usage is reimbursed. But for them, it's a 16-hour day. I can't guarantee bathroom breaks or dinner breaks or anything like that. We train them. I give them a little pin, which they do like, but is just a tiny gesture on my part. So I appreciate all of their work. If you are interested in working the polling place, please contact the office with the same number I gave. The average age of our poll worker in Story County is 68 years old. It seems to be getting older with every election. So if you run a business and you want to release your workers who work on Election Day, I would also appreciate that as well. Mm-hmm. So,
Well, it sounds like a lot of people do this just out of the love for it.
Yeah, we have a lot of people that have done it for years. We also have some new people that we got on board this time around. Sometimes, you know, if we have a big election like 2012, that was a huge election, and that just some people said, I can't do this anymore. That was too much, which is too bad. Yeah. In a presidential cycle, we get close to 70% turnout. In this midterm election, we'll get about 50% turnout. With a city election, we'll probably get in the high teens. And with a school election, we usually get in the neighborhood of 5 to 10% turnout of registered voters. So you kind of spike. You go for 2 years, and it's very laid back. And then we have a presidential or a governor's election, and it gets really intense. So 2016 is the election that scares me. That's going to be an open seat, high turnout, high interest, more students at ISU. So
always more students.
Yeah, that's why we wanted to try some new things this time around to see if we can make some improvements for that.
So what does your office do when it's not registering voters and dealing with election cycles? Does the auditor's office have another role?
We have four other main roles. Elections is one of them. We also are in charge of property records, processing those. We create the valuation for the whole county, which all entities use to run their taxes and create their budgets. We're in charge of the county's budget and where accounts payable and payroll. We're also clerk to the Board of Supervisors, so I have somebody that takes the minutes, and then I proof those minutes every week. We don't just do elections, and none of these duties go away while we're having a big election. So my finance staff, my payroll staff, my real estate staff, they're all working on elections right now as well, but they're also performing all of their other duties that we have to do. Paying the county's bills every 2 weeks doesn't go away. Paying our employees every 2 weeks, that doesn't go away. Processing deeds and subdivisions and getting ready for budget season doesn't go away. So we have busy times and then busier times, and this is one of the busier times.
Right. And everybody's holding up well, though.
I have a great staff. I can't say enough about them. I get all the credit, but a lot of that is due to them. I take the blame when that happens, too, so they like that. But they make me look good, and that's what allows me to be here this morning and to actually get a decent night's sleep most nights. It's a little hard this close to an election.
And just one more thing I wanted to ask you about. The traditional way of signing in when you go to your polling place is to sign a large ledger, and the person finds you in the ledger. And tell me how computers have changed that process, and will you have a backup system in case there's a computer malfunction?
Sure, and yes. Short answer. We have Precinct Atlas. This was created by Cerro Gordo County and is used by 60-plus counties in Iowa. It's on the laptop. It's an electronic register of voters, and they have their precinct, but they also have the whole county. They also have a backup paper register should we experience machine failure or electricity outage. So you go up to the computer. You give them your name. They look you up. They ask you more identifying information. They ask for your address. If all that checks out, they print a label, they put it on the eligibility slip, and every voter signs that declaration of eligibility, which says that they are a resident of their precinct, that they don't claim the right to vote anywhere else, that they have not already cast a ballot, and that everything that they've presented that day is true, and then they sign that. So all voters take that oath, and they sign that, and then that gets passed down, and so the ballot can be distributed. So it's a little different. In some jurisdictions, you do sign a book that has basically right next to your name. But we use the declaration of eligibility here in Story County. So,
and there will be no hanging chads.
Yeah, we have paper ballots here. We don't use that butterfly ballot with the stylus. I don't think Florida uses that anymore either. Paper ballots are mandated in Iowa. You're given a special ballot marking pen. You have to fill in the oval next to your choice, and then that all goes into a tabulator, which is a ballot scanner that counts the ballot.
Okay.
And absentee ballots are counted on the exact same pieces of machinery, just backed by the absentee board in the administration building on election day. And those are counted on election day. There's all sorts of myths about absentee ballots, like you only count those if the race is close, or I don't know where these come from, but these are sort of pervasive myths nationwide.
Legends.
Yes. Yes. And I can't get rid of them. They're like rooting out Creeping Charlie in your yard. It's or breaking a dandelion root. They just keep coming back. So
what time on election night or Wednesday morning do you expect to be home in bed and done with this process?
Well, our process doesn't end on election night. We hope that we have our unofficial results in before midnight. What happens is then we're back in the office the next day at 8 a.m. to look at things like write-in tallies and prepare for the canvass and to answer everybody's questions. So we still have a full week ahead of us in the auditor's office on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And then again on Monday, Tuesday the 11th is a holiday, so we're looking forward to that. Not just to celebrate our veterans, but also to not have to go to the office that day. We're appreciative all the way around for that. So,
okay. Well, Lucy, you have been very generous with your time to come in and give us this update. And we know you're busy and have a meeting right in a couple of minutes here. So we'll let you go. Any last words about the election on Tuesday?
Just polls are open 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. if you haven't voted. Please do. If you're registered or if you don't know you're registered, please call us and we'll check for you. Thanks.
And there's three locations
tomorrow. My office, 9 to 5, Ames Public Library, 10 to 4, Ascension Lutheran Church, 10 to 4.
Very
okay.
good.
Thank you, Lucy.
You're welcome.
Well, we're fortunate not to have the kinds of problems you hear about in other states with the lines lasting for hours and so on.
I couldn't agree more, Kay. Have you voted yet?
Yep, I have. First time in my life, actually, because I've only just become a citizen, although I've lived here for years. So that was exciting.
Congratulations.
For me. Yeah.
Yes. And I did also, I sent my ballot in early to stem some of those campaign phone calls. But it's too bad because later in the process that we've done on KHOI, interviewing candidates and so forth, I kind of wish I could have revised my vote. But
oh, well, that's the way it goes, I guess.
Yes. And anyway, onward and upward.
Like a tree.
Yes, like a tree. You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We're your hosts today, Greta Anderson and Kay Puddock, and we are talking trees for the rest of the hour today.
This month, I've been featuring the Iowa Arboretum as part of the Community Service Appreciation Program. And at the end of the hour, I speak to a representative that's the director of the Arboretum in Madrid, Iowa, about their upcoming programs. The Arboretum is an absolutely lovely place to visit, and I've enjoyed my October getting to know about it.
And now we have a news flash. In case you haven't heard, the emerald ash borer has been discovered in Storey County. It was late August when the results came back on some leaves from a tree in Storey City. This story is particularly interesting because Storey City has a special relationship with trees. For 17 years, they have earned the designation of Tree City USA. And appropriately enough, their mayor, Mike Jensen, is one of the leaders of their chapter of Trees Forever, which leads the efforts to certify the city. So I visited with him yesterday about the discovery of this pernicious pest in their fair city.
There was a tree out by Jacobson Park that it was pretty well dead, and the neighbor got worried about it and cut down a branch off of it and sent it to the state to have it analyzed, and it came back positive for emerald ash borer, and that's the first that we've noticed at our park board and tree board, and we've been around, and we keep looking for this because we know it's coming. I think it's in, I think I got it written down here somewhere, 18 states right now, and it's in Canada, and so... And the whole state of Iowa, I don't know if you know that, but it's quarantined because of the emerald ash borer. You cannot ship wood out of the state of Iowa without it being inspected, which is good because that's how the emerald ash borer really probably got here. Somebody transported wood to their cabin here or were going through and some fell off and now it's here. And so they really ask you not to transport firewood out of the region. If you go to Minnesota and camp, then buy your firewood there. So it's just a safety precaution.
So somebody noticed certain signs of some problems on an ash tree. Can you describe exactly what they were looking for?
Well, I'm not sure they were looking for it at the time because this tree had been dead for a while. And then when we started handing out information at our tree sales and that and telling people about what to look for, they thought, well, that's an ash tree and it's been dead. So they just took a snip off of it and sent it in, and then it was confirmed that it was the emerald ash borer. But if you want to look, the top starts thinning out right up in the top. The leaves start dropping off in the middle of the summer or whenever. And then in about 2 years after that happens, the tree's probably dead. But they work underneath the bark. It's kind of like a serpentine pattern. They eat all around the tree, which cuts off all the nutrients going up to the tree, and that's why it starts dying at the top. And then the exit hole where the larva comes out when they become a beetle, it's a D-shaped hole, about an eighth of an inch in diameter. And you can see if there's those in your tree, you know you actually have the emerald ash borer. Because there are some little serpentine channels in some of the ash trees, but it isn't the emerald ash borer. But this is a dead giveaway, is that D exit hole that they gnaw through. So
that's really interesting. And, you know, just getting your firewood from somebody else in general is kind of a risky thing. If you're right. That firewood turns out to be ash wood, then you might have brought the disease to your property decades before it actually had to come.
Yeah. Now, if you go to like Come and Go or Casey's or somewhere where they're selling maybe 10 pieces of firewood, there'll be a sticker on all those, and it'll tell where that wood came from. And that's required by the law now that they do that. And that's the main reason is to, since we're quarantined, the wood cannot go out of the state of Iowa unless it's been inspected.
So once you found out that this tree near the park was infested, what did you do?
Well, they're cut down, of course, and then the recommended way to do it is to chip them all up or burn them or both. And some of the sawmills have in the state of Iowa will buy them and cut them up into lumber. So then the lumber is cured, and, of course, the larva is killed then. And that's the way it gets transported, is somebody cutting wood down that don't know that larva's in there and take it somewhere else, and then it spreads. Because they only travel about 2.5 miles in a year's time themselves. Mm-hmm. And this started over around the Great Lakes where the ships brought in diseased wood from China. They had diseased trees in China. They cut down those trees and made wood shipping crates and wood pellets. Well, the larva was in that wood, and when it came, then it started hatching out around the Great Lakes, and they've cut down over 12 million trees around the Great Lakes because of that emerald ash borer.
So I would think you'd really just want to burn the stuff, but you're saying that it can be used as lumber if it is cured.
Yeah, when they put that in a kiln to dry the wood, then the larva is killed. And otherwise, you cut it down and you burn it or shred the logs. So,
okay, so curing is not just a matter of waiting. It's also a treatment process.
It is. It is. And the people that buy those logs and sawmills, they've got to have all that stuff taken care of with the DNR and the state. So they're not transporting it out of the state either to a lumber mill somewhere else.
Okay, so this is regulated.
It is.
That was Mike Jensen, the mayor of Story City and a member of Trees Forever, talking about the emerald ash borer, which has been discovered in one tree in Story City.
Yeah, and it was interesting how he described that discovery being made, a resident just happening to look at some literature that the town distributed and then putting two and two together. It makes you think that there might be other trees in Story County or in the region that are affected and that maybe people aren't paying close enough attention as they do in Story City.
Yes, exactly. And this brings me to another part of the story, which is Story City's long-term designation as a tree city, as Tree City USA. Each year they have to apply to the Arbor Foundation located in Nebraska using its point system. And this past year, he told me that was a shoo-in, though. This application was very easy because of an ordinance they had changed in the city that earned them 6 points, 6 out of 10 points.
Hmm. Yeah, they enacted a new law about trees.
Well, it had been a $500 fine to cut down a city tree, one that was on public property. They turned it into a $1,000 fine when a particular resident, an employee of the town, no less, decided to cut down not one but two Kentucky coffee trees across from his house, or rather, you know, on the boulevard facing his sidewalk. I've not seen this tree. I'm not familiar with it. I've read about it, certainly. But evidently, it deposits a whole lot of pods and so forth in a particular part of the season. And this homeowner just didn't feel like sweeping his sidewalk every year.
So he had to pay the fine?
Yes, they did charge him the original $500 per tree. But the incident motivated the town to increase their fine for chopping down a city tree to $1,000. Fine. And they also have a tree sale every year that Mike mentioned in that first part. That's when they distribute a lot of their information, including, Mike said, there's a part in that bulletin about this fine. So in case anybody has any questions about that. But anyway, here's Mike talking about that tree sale they have every April.
We apply for a grant from our natural gas supplier, Black Hills Energy, and it used to be Aquila, and before that it was Northern Natural Gas. So, and we've done this since 1993. We've been writing grants to them and asked for anywhere from $2,500 up to this year it was $4,500 we asked for. And most of the time we get just about all that we asked for. Well, then the city's been very good, and they match that money. So like last year, we had a $4,000 grant asking, and we got it, and they matched that. And we bought, I think, 78 trees. And we sold, I think, 49 of them, and we sell them at a reduced price. We buy them for about $80 to $100, $120, and we sell them for $40. And so it's a good buy for the people in the community. They're nice trees, healthy trees, and that way we get them planted, scattered throughout the community, and we don't have to take care of those. And then we pull out whatever is left, anywhere from 30 to 40 trees, and we do a tree planting project with the Scouts, the Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts, Girl Scouts. We've had Catholic priests from Ames come up and help, and a lot of citizens. And we probably get anywhere from 50 to 80 people to help plant trees, and we take a day and just go out and plant them throughout the community in the park system and where we've had to take other trees down.
So these are good-sized trees if they're $80 wholesale.
Yeah, they're $80 to $100. They come in like a number 10 to 15 pot. Some of them are 12 foot tall, inch and a half in diameter or better. So they're a well-established tree.
And do you have certain favorite trees that you like to plant around Story City?
Well, you know, they used to plant a lot of elm trees, and they got Dutch elm disease, and we lost hundreds of trees through the community. And then to replace those, they planted ash trees. Now we have the emerald ash borer, and it's taken them. So the last many, many years, we've been planting 14 or 15 varieties of trees, and some of them aren't normal for here, but they're doing fine, and they're within the zone where they should be planted. So that way, we aren't going to lose all our trees at once. So maybe take a few varieties here and there, because I think right now there's 20 pests in the state of Iowa, and a lot of them are from Asia that are here killing our trees. There's a longhorn beetle. There's a thousand canker that's killing the black walnut trees, the emerald ash borer, the gypsy moth. They're just, you can go on and on. So it pays to plant a lot of different varieties of trees.
Have any other towns in the area come to you and said, you know, how do we get involved and become a tree city?
Well, we have a tree banquet. Trees Forever out of Marion, Iowa, puts on a tree banquet every year, and they really promote Trees Forever, and they also promote Tree City USA. And most of them that are in Trees Forever organizations become a Tree City USA just because of the designation of being that. It shows that you really care for trees and promote the growth within the community. That plaque you see over there on the wall, that big green one with all the stickers, well, I think we're at our 17th year, and there's no more places to put the stickers on the plaque, and we'll keep going as long as we can. We started in 1993 becoming a tree city, or not a tree city USA, but Trees Forever City, and then we got into this 17 years ago.
And this is a personal passion for you as well, not just
Absolutely.
As mayor.
Absolutely. I've always enjoyed the outdoors, and we've planted 7.5 acres of prairie, and we've done a lot of landscaping around the community, and we've planted 2,400 trees since 93. So, and we take care of them for 3 years, water and mulch and pruning, and then at the end of the 3 years, we turn them over to the city for their maintenance. We have about 30 members.
You're talking about Trees Forever.
Yes, yeah, Story City Trees Forever, right. The regular Trees Forever is in Marion, Iowa, and Shannon Ramsey is the president of that. And she kind of started this on a whim, and it's just grown. She's into Illinois now and probably going to be in other states too. If you ever met her, you could see how things have grown because of her love for trees. So
this is kind of like a Pheasants Forever. They just took the same concept and applied it to trees.
Exactly.
And yeah. It originated in Iowa.
It did, up in Marion, Iowa, where Shannon lives. Her and Dave Koch, I believe it was, had a dream of doing this, and they followed through with it, and it's just growing and growing and growing. So,
and the gas people who provide you some funds, is it because the shade helps them?
a lot of the energy that is saved by planting shade trees at your house reduces their need to expand their operation, you know, more utilities. So that's why they do it.
This year was a really great year for trees, but the year before, last summer, that was bad stuff with the drought and the Japanese beetles. Did you have to take special measures for your trees?
Well, we've always watered the trees for those 3 years. The city helped us and bought an old tanker truck that was getting not fast enough to get to the fires and had a 1,500-gallon water tank on. So we asked them if we could get that, and they purchased it for us, and then we replumbed it so we have 5 hose bibs across the back so we can take 5 hoses out and water trees all at once. And that saved a lot of trees. It really has. I think since 1993 we probably haven't lost more than maybe 15 or 20 trees because of that, being able to go out and water them and keep them wet through the drought. So, and then we always water the new ones right up till the ground freezes, which is good. And we mulch them, stake them, and keep them pruned up for 3 years. So
that's nice.
And the nice part about it is getting the youth involved. When we first started this, I'd ask the scoutmasters if we could get some of the Boy Scouts to help plant trees. They said, sure, that'd be good. And so we set a date. Well, the date we set, they had a camp out that same Saturday. And the scoutmaster said, we'll plant trees first, and then we'll go on our camping trip. Well, that didn't set real well with some of them. You know, they wanted to go camping all weekend. But then on Sunday, this was on a Saturday. Sunday morning in church, one of their parents, scouts' parents, came up and said, you know, them scouts were pretty upset that you were taking them away from their camping trip. And the scoutmaster said, you got to go plant trees. But on the way to church, we had to go by and see his tree that he'd planted. So they were really into that. And we've had great participation from the scouts ever since. That was 2 years ago. We had 80-some people, scouts and their parents. And then we always do a tree planting demonstration before we start. We show them how to take it out of the pot. And some of them that have been in the pot, they got what we call girdling roots that follow the pot around, and how you should trim them back, cut them, and plant them at a certain depth so that they're planted back at the depth they were, and mulch and stake them, and then water them. And then we send them out in small groups with one, either a Trees Forever member or a couple of their parents, with all the tools they need to plant that tree. And then we kind of follow up, see how they've done, and they've done excellent work. So I think it's a good education for the kids. It gives them a little pride of ownership in those trees, and they can come back later and show their kids or their grandkids, we planted this tree way back when.
Now, do the girls want to plant trees too?
They do plant trees. They planted a whole row over here just a couple years ago across from the library. The Girl Scouts and Brownie Scouts, we've had the Key Club from the school. We've had FFA kids, and they just did a Trees for Kids project at a new ball field over by the Roland Story Middle School. And I think they planted 50 trees over there. So they're getting involved, and I'm glad to see it because it's just better for the community and them too.
Do you think you'll ever run out of space to plant trees?
Oh, no. Because of the disease and the storms, I don't think we'll ever plant enough trees. We just got to keep replacing different varieties, and you know, it beautifies the community. It puts back a lot of oxygen. It takes a lot of carbon dioxide out of the air, and it keeps erosion down. There's just so many advantages to a tree. And when you get into it, like all the years that you and I've been in it, you know that, and it's kind of nice to pass that on to the younger generation. So,
well, thank you, Mike Jensen, mayor of Story City and tree enthusiast, member of Story City Trees Forever.
Well, I was glad to do the interview anytime. Thank you very much.
And you are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm one of your hosts, Greta Anderson, and I'm here with Kay Puttick, and we're talking about trees. You know, Kay, Mike Jensen there was so positive, but he said something after the interview that I thought was really telling. He said, you know, here in Story City, we live in a small town, and in a small town, you've got to have projects like these to energize people. Hmm. Otherwise, you'll just wither away. And I'm thinking he was talking about both trees and towns.
Yeah. Well, that famous, somewhat hackneyed poem came to my mind. You know the one, Trees.
Oh, yes, Joyce Kilmer. I think that I shall never see a poem as lovely as a tree.
A tree whose hungry mouth is pressed against the earth's sweet flowing breast. A tree that looks at God all day and lifts her leafy arms to pray.
A tree that may in summer wear a nest of robins in her hair, upon whose bosom snow has lain, who intimately lives with rain.
Poems are made by fools like me, but only God can make a tree.
I love it. Joyce Kilmer is from New Brunswick, New Jersey, where I went to graduate school. So there is a major boulevard named for him, and I think even a campus.
This is a male Joyce, was it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like Joyce Carey, yeah.
And that poem always struck me as some kind of fallacy. I was a literature student, of course, and so, you know, you write a bad poem about how poetry is not as compelling as nature.
And that makes it an effective poem. It proves its point.
Right. So, Kay, do you have, it's been, like we mentioned at the beginning, a lovely autumn for trees. Have you been watching any particular tree?
Well, you know, the maples always seem to have lovely colors. It's not a tree exactly, but I have a beautiful burning bush in my yard, and I think it's the loveliest I've ever seen it. I also used to have a big staghorn sumac right outside my patio doors,
yeah.
And they would go beautiful orange. Unfortunately, you know, they don't live very long, but I've got a new one coming up from the roots. You know, usually you have to keep the extra volunteers ones trimmed back, but it was handy because I've got a new one coming up. And that is lovely orange, but it's not, as, of course, as effective as the really big one I used to have.
Yeah, and my favorite effect is when it's often most dramatic in a sort of small to medium-sized tree, and the leaves are all turning yellow, and then gradually they start coming down from the top and forming a leaf shadow right at the base.
Oh, right, yes.
So instead of it being, you know, dark, it's this light yellow at the base. That's my favorite. But I think the winds last night were just so powerful that thing like that is gone.
Yeah, it sounded quite ghostly. I was working on the computer, and I've got a bunch of birches, you know, and they were rubbing against the window, which I've never done before.
So you've been visiting Madrid, Iowa, quite a bit this season.
Talking about the Arboretum and running PSAs about the Arboretum. And it's just a wonderful place. It's a bit of a way out from Ames, but once you get there.
Yeah, and you said that there are some events coming up that are planned there. I would like to make my way out to the Iowa Arboretum, and perhaps you can give me a good excuse.
Yeah, my dog and I have certainly enjoyed going out there. They have what they call a library of living plants out there, and it's a really beautiful place. I forget how many acres, but it's huge. But aside from the Arboretum itself, which has an entrance fee, sort of the other side of the road where the parking is, there's all these woodland walks which you don't have to, you know, you don't have to actually enter the Arboretum itself to use those woodland walks. And that's you know, as I say, my dog loves going out there. But in this interview we've got coming up here, this recorded interview, I spoke again with the director of the Arboretum, Mark Schneider, and he was just telling me about the events that are coming up in November and December at the Arboretum. So we're going to talk about the programs that you've got coming up at the Arboretum through November, and then maybe you'd like to talk about the December ones too.
Sure, that'd be fine.
Now, I see you've got three classes coming up and a sale.
We do.
Yeah.
During the month of November.
Yeah, Planting Prairies. I guess that's a class, an adult education class, on the 1st of November.
We do. It's from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Brad Rip Hannigan from Trees Forever, and he's going to be talking about prairies and roadside prairies especially. And when you're driving along the roads, you'll be able to see them and just be able to answer questions about how they got established and how they're funded, because it's important that we're restoring prairies in Iowa. He'll also talk about what the home gardener can do to establish prairies in their yards. talking about planting, seed sources, and then how to take care of it once you put in
now,
a prairie.
Is there a problem if someone wants a prairie in their front yard that the neighbors will call it a weed patch?
Well, that's possible. One person's weeds is another person's flowers, but you'd have to check with, you know, if there's any city codes for planting your yards. And I think the other thing is that you always have to be respectful to your neighbors. So
you could have it in your backyard, for sure.
You definitely could, or your side yard. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's coming up right at the beginning of November.
November 1st. There also will be a walk after, you know, through the class out into our own prairie to talk about prairies and how you maintain them and things like that.
Is there much to see in a prairie at this time of the year in November?
Well, I think there's always something to see in a prairie. Maybe it's not flowering, but, I mean, just walking out into the prairie and seeing the grasses, I think it takes you back in time to a place when Iowa was mostly prairies.
Yes.
I think it's a real connection to the earth and to Iowa's history.
And presumably there's quite a lot of wildlife to see, too, the birds.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. There's wildlife and a lot of animals depend on the prairies.
Okay, so that's an adult education class. And then there's a family class, I guess for all ages, on November the 8th.
It's a chance for families to come together and make a Thanksgiving centerpiece for Thanksgiving. We'll have Sandy Gossman, who's very talented, will be coming out to the Arboretum and will guide people through arranging dried flowers and seasonal accents into a table arrangement that can sit on your table during the holiday.
Now, for that class, should people bring their own materials?
We would provide the materials. They could bring gloves and maybe some clippers if they have favorite clippers, or maybe something that they would like to put into the arrangement. But other than that, we can supply everything to make a really nice table arrangement.
So that's on November the 8th. That's a Saturday from
that's
9
correct.
To 11. That would be a good family activity for
a
Saturday.
One. Yes.
And then something about trees later on the November the 15th.
Yeah, this is one of my most interesting classes, I think. I mean, they're all interesting, but this is trees on the cusp of winter. And I was looking for a class that would tell or inform people about what happens to trees at certain times of year. What happens to a tree when it loses its leaves? What happens to a tree, you know, what are the roots doing, or what's going on with a tree? And Jeff Carson's, the Plant Introduction Center, USDA in Ames, is coming to the Arboretum, and he's going to talk about things that you don't see with plants, with trees, during the year, and why that things are happening the way they are. And Jeff's been a teacher for us before. He's outstanding, very knowledgeable, and he'll be coming out to talk to us. And also, there'll be a hike with us also, a nice, friendly walk into the Arboretum to look at trees and talk about what's going on with them. It's a little bit different. It's kind of everything you want to know about a tree but haven't asked.
Okay, and then you've got a holiday sale in the potting shed.
That's our gift shop, and it's really a nice gift shop. It's a place where you can find holiday gifts for the coming holidays, and we have a lot of different types of home decor, garden items, books, T-shirts, pottery. Heather Bass, our gift shop manager, does a great job of bringing in some really nice things to make terrific gifts.
This is a special sale you've got on November the 15th, but presumably they could go in there any time, not necessarily
That's correct.
During the sale. What are your hours at the potting shed?
That day they'll be from 9 to 4, Saturday, November 15th.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On other days that when there isn't a special sale, are you open or not during the winter?
We're going into winter hours in November.
Okay.
So during the week, we're open from 8:30 to 4:30 in the gift shop, Monday through Friday. Then in just the month of December, we'll be open on the weekends before the holiday because we have trees that will be on display. So people will be able to come in to see the trees and also shop. We have Dad's Belgium waffles, breakfast, and that's a fundraiser for us. It's December 6th, Saturday. We have fresh, delicious waffles that are being made, and they're very large, and they're, like I said, very delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And that's from 9 to 11 on December 6th, which is a Saturday.
Now, it says Dad's Belgian Waffles, but you don't have to be a dad necessarily to come, I presume.
You don't have to be a dad, or you don't have to be Belgian either.
Okay.
You have to be hungry. That's very important.
That's the only requirement, huh?
Right. And on that same day, if you are interested, we have a small class going on making holiday wreaths.
Hmm.
So you could come out. Our education coordinator, Nan Bonefees, will be there, and she'll be helping people set up and make simple wreaths. It's another class. It's really an ideal time to gather something very creative while you're attending the waffle breakfast.
Sure, yeah.
And that's all on December 6th.
Well, that sounds fun. Do you want to say a bit more about the trees, though, the Christmas trees? Or?
We will have Christmas trees on display from December 6th through December 22nd, called Homegrown Holidays. And all the trees are grown in Iowa by local tree growers, and they donate a tree to the Arboretum. And then we have local organizations and clubs, garden clubs, civic groups. They come out and decorate the tree.
These are cut trees, I presume, are they?
They are cut trees,
mm-hmm.
Yes. Our main room in our visitor center is just outstanding decorations, a lot of natural materials, as well as interesting types of ornaments.
So when they come out for the Belgian waffles, that's the first day of the trees, too. They can see the trees at the same time.
It is.
And they can do the class.
They can, if they choose, they can do the holiday wreaths.
That sounds like a lovely day.
It really is.
Well, that sounds like a lot of stuff before the holidays, before Christmas. Anything coming up the rest of the month of December?
In December, we do have a holiday gala, which is the 14th of December. It's from 3 to 6. It's on a Sunday afternoon. And, we have music and a silent auction and a really delicious meal. It's a good way to come out to the Arboretum. Good way to connect with the Arboretum in December.
Uh-huh.
So it's a good way to close out the year and get ready for the new year.
Terrific. Well, is there anything else, or that's a lot, certainly, that you've already
done? We try to stay very busy at the Iowa Arboretum.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fabulous place to come and to walk and to get involved and to become a member.
Yeah, and in the winter when you tend not to get out so much, it'd be nice to go out there and maybe have a walk and then come inside and, like, on this December the 14th, have the holiday meal. That would be lovely. Well, thank you so much for telling us what's coming up at the Arboretum.
Thank you so much, Kay.
I've been talking to Mark Schneider, the Executive Director of the Iowa Arboretum.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been talking about trees. That was Mark Schneider, director of Iowa Arboretum. Before that, we discussed the Emerald Ash Borer with the mayor of Story City, Mike Jensen. Story City is a Tree City USA, and Mike is a member of Trees Forever, an organization that is going national but was started by a woman in the Cedar Rapids area. We'll link to information about those organizations on our website.
We started the hour by speaking with Lucy Martin, Story County Auditor and woman in charge of our upcoming elections.
We've been your hosts, Greta Anderson and Kay Puddock. Our engineer was Becca Brown. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard a tune by a group called Belly, Feed the Tree, that was very popular in its day 20 years ago.
You can listen to this show and past shows by visiting our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org.
And if you want to try your hand at journalism, you can join our group of reporters. Maybe you'll get lucky like I did yesterday and interview a candidate for national office.
That's right. When will that air?
My interview with Jim Maurer airs Monday at 7, noon and 7. We're not sure yet whether Steve King will throw his hat in the ring and call me up, too.
And as always, dear listeners, we'd like to remind you that you make this possible. After all, if a radio show is produced in the studio and no one's listening, is that really a radio show?
A philosophical problem for you to ponder while you look for affected ash trees in your area. Those emerald ash borers do exist whether or not you find them, so be aware.
And watch out for ghosts and bogeymen, too.
And goblins and candy snatchers.
And we'll see you again on the radio.
Very soon.
Happy Halloween.